Cotswold. In studio with me today, I have Greg Ottenbright, Yorkton MLA, also Rural and Remote Health Minister, and Minister of Ukraine Relations. Greg, it's been a while since we had you back in studio, but it's great to see you. And I know the busyness I know of being an MLA continues despite being out of session, but we do get to see a bit more inside the riding around this time of year. So again, great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jordan. It's always a pleasure to come in and visit. All friends here for sure, but it's good to come in and visit, but also good to come in and maybe chat about some of the things that are on your mind, which likely is on the minds of people out in the constituency too. So
for sure. Might add as well, clean shaven Greg Ottenbright in studio with me because of course, November ending. Movember has just ended, if you will. That was, again, something you decided to take part in. How did that all work out with in the end?
It went pretty good. We ended up with a fairly good-sized team, five of our members of caucus, four cabinet members, and one our government whip took part in our team. Mm-hmm. We raised I think better than $4,000 for Movember this year. I was honored to be chosen as the team captain this year. It was pretty neat. Had a lot of fun running the team or leading the team, but all in all, for a really good cause. We ended up raising some pretty good money and having a lot of fun while doing it, but I am definitely happy to get my face shaved off again.
Perhaps even more so your wife.
Yeah. Well, I was walking out of the house on, I think it was the morning of the first, I shaved myself, and Leland grabbed me by the face and gave me a kiss and said, "Oh, you're back."
Well, great. I know that's a cause that's very near and dear to your heart. And as well now with some of the responsibilities, and like I mentioned, the fall session just ended last week. So coming from that, what the government wanted to accomplish, and were they able to do everything that they set out to do, or did some things get left and have to be taken care of maybe in the winter session?
Well, I think for the most part, there's a few things that we put on hold that we can look after in the spring and get through in the spring.
Okay.
Just in respect of some of the consultation we were doing with some of the stakeholder groups out there that, maybe had some, wanted to buy a bit more time before things were introduced. So for the most part, anything we postponed was at the request of stakeholders out in the province. But outside of that, we did pass a fair amount of legislation this session, as well as, we delivered our throne speech, which is our plan for the upcoming year. And, pretty much no surprise to people, we talked about balancing the budget in 3 years, and the throne speech laid out a little bit more of our plan for doing that over the next 3 years. And so far, so good. We're on track. We actually had a bit of a surplus, not a surplus in the budget, but a surplus as opposed to what we expected to have available at the last quarter report. So, all in all, the economy is doing very well. We're on track to balance the budget when we had promised to do that. And, I think it's recognized, but not only within the province, you get criticized from time to time, but outside agencies, banks, and financial institutions usually rate provinces, and what gives us our credit rating. And we're one of the only provinces in Canada. I think there's one other province, maybe BC, that still has a AAA credit rating, although other ones have fallen behind, including Alberta and, of course, Ontario and some of the other ones. But so all in all, again, the economy looks strong and strengthening slightly. Our financial plan's on track, and we got some key pieces of legislation through that are crucial to deal with right now. Specifically, some of them are quite time sensitive, and some of them are based on federal wishes. The cannabis legislation, for one thing, is something we'd like to see that slow down a bit, but they've already told us it's going to be coming into force in the beginning of July, so get your ducks in a row. So we've been working with the justice stakeholders, health stakeholders, and listening to people's input to see where they'd like us to go with that legislation, but we'll have that in place in the spring session for when that legislation is enacted by the federal government. One thing, I guess, in speaking about the federal government, it's been pretty clear, although, whether Liberal or Conservative government in the past, Premier Wall and I think our government as a whole has stood up to them, even if they're more friendly, I guess, for Saskatchewan interests. And I think that was pretty indicative, especially over the last year in this last session, where we would things, whether it's environmental, like carbon taxes, or whether it's pipeline reviews and approvals, or you name it, things that we're doing in health, that we're tending to have to stand up to the federal government and represent Saskatchewan interests, not
right.
not uh, as the NDP would say, consult with the feds or, you know, listen to the feds, because we're here to represent Saskatchewan, not the federal government. So.
Right. Can you clarify something that was announced last week? There's talk about now carbon tax and in Saskatchewan and what it all means. And there was an announcement that was made by Premier Wall that sort of stated that for the time being, it looks like we can pump the brakes a little bit. There's a plan that's now going to be, I guess, that's going to get going in Saskatchewan that has somewhat satisfied the government in kind of what they're looking for a province to initiate.
Federal government, disappointingly, it doesn't sound like it. I mean, we've displayed, even in the past, with the example that the Saskatchewans displayed, especially when you look at Boundary Dam 3, the carbon capture project down there, mm-hmm. although the federal government ideologically and other people ideologically don't like it, the reality is we're going to have coal in our power mix for quite a while to come. And our focus is to clean it up and to share that technology around the world, because we know India, China, even Germany quietly is bringing coal back online because they realize they can't supply the power they need for the people and industries in their jurisdictions. And so we realize that, so we might as well be proactive with it. But what the federal government wants to do is basically a carbon tax. So that takes money, it taxes our emitters, and even our private individuals, our families, taxes our families, takes money out of our economy for whatever purposes they see as a priority. What we want to do is basically a tech fund where we will levy charges against some of the heavier emitters, and one of those would be Sask Power, but you know, some other ones that are in industry, but levy against them that would put that money into a tech fund to be used in the province for furthering our technology and in that creating jobs. So not only are you addressing the issue, but you're also doing things to strengthen your economy and your workforce and everything else within your jurisdictions, even in Canada. And to us, that's a more proactive approach, because you're actually doing something about the issue. All this does, a carbon tax, all it does is take money out of your economy. And, you know, the federal government says they might reallocate it back to the provincial government if they like what we're doing. But again, we're here for Saskatchewan interests. We feel we have a very comprehensive, a common sense plan. Okay. And we were sure that the federal government would look favorably on it, but it almost, like with the pipeline approval process, it seems like if they don't like something, they move the bar. And it seems to us that they're sort of moving the bar based on their own ideology and not on scientific fact on this. So it's a bit frustrating, but we're going to continue to push the Saskatchewan agenda where we can.
All right. It's all you ever wanted to know. Again, joining us, Greg Ottenbright, Yorkton MLA, and also going to dive in shortly with some of his other responsibilities as a cabinet minister too. Now, in terms of the session as well, Bill 40, that was also big topic of conversation, government stepping back from legislation that had gone through previously, but then taking a look back or a step back in terms of repealing. What was it that I guess led to deciding to repeal?
Well, just a lot of the communication we had with people around the province. I still believe a lot of it's based on misunderstanding. And what happened in years past, the New Democrats previously did the Crown Protection Act. And then there are talks about privatization, but they failed to define what privatization meant. So what we did, we went to very reputable sources and said, like, how do you define privatization? And what most if not all very educated sources said, anything below 49% or less is not privatization, because you still have control of that company. So we put the Interpretation Act into force, not to weaken the Crown Protection Act, but to interpret what privatization actually meant. And in that definition, it allowed for a possible sale of up to 49% of a Crown corporation. Mm-hmm. People even, depends what their background was, but we just heard overwhelmingly from an enormous amount of people in the province that they didn't want any portion of the Crown's protected or sold. So in respect of that, that's when we repealed, for the most part, most of Bill 40. The one part we had to leave into place when it talks about winding down a Crown corporation, that's because SDC's in the midst. It's not totally wound down yet. Mm-hmm. So we have to leave that in force until that work is totally complete. But after that's done, you know, it's up for the next leader and whatever government he appoints in place to represent him in cabinet to see where they're going to go from there. But from my own personal point of view, from a business background, you know, I see that SaskTel in particular is a small company in a big market now. It's the only small telecommunications company in North America. And by taking on a more major partner, in my view anyway, would actually strengthen the company, would maybe make it go nationwide and become possibly the fourth largest carrier in the country, which would reap benefits to the taxpayers of the province eventually, and actually strengthen the crown. But again, we overwhelmingly heard that that's not where people want us to go. So we're going to do what we can within SaskTel to develop partnerships to strengthen the company, to look for opportunities wherever we can to make sure the company is strong. And in that, keep reinvesting in the province, including, you know, more connectivity throughout rural Saskatchewan, and make sure we have one of the best communication companies in Canada.
Now, liquor stores was something that proceeded with privatization. Now across Saskatchewan, we are going to start to see those stores pop up. And with that, I know there was much talk about people hearing about what is coming to their community and wondering, oh, well, how does that work? Like I know in Yorkton's case, for example, a lot of people, they're rolling their eyes that Sobeys is coming back after leaving us as a grocery store. And that upset a lot of people. But how did that process really unfold with the selection of companies and all the rest?
It was a market process. RFPs were sent out and all companies had their opportunity to bid on those different opportunities. Mm-hmm. And Sobeys was the successful bidder for the Yorkton area. Co-ops around the province got some significant amount of the stores, some smaller venues, some slightly bigger. Mm-hmm. But it was all a third-party process. We put the wheels in motion and an outside accounting firm did the assessments and basically did the awarding of the contracts to the different providers. And, you know, even with Sobeys, I mean, you know, yeah, they pulled out of Yorkton for their own specific reasons, you know, whether it was rent, whether it was taxation, whatever else. It's a business decision they made. But, you know, they're back in town with a store investing in the province. And although I'm not a big, I don't darken too many doorways of liquor stores, it's something that people want. And, you know, they're successfully the successful bidder in that process. And you know, we have to respect that anyone that didn't get it, that were upset, probably didn't have their pencil sharp enough. And it's it comes down to what's the best proponent for that project. And of course, they got a few, and a lot of them went out to other sources. In fact, I think it was about a half a dozen went to previous employees of those specific stores that bid on those, and they were the successful proponents in some of the smaller communities as well. So we have some former liquor board employees that are actually have their own liquor stores in their communities now.
Okay. Again, joining us, Yorkton MLA Greg Ottenbright, also Rural and Remote Health Minister and Minister of Ukraine Relations. We're going to take a quick break, but more with Greg, particularly looking ahead to the future of the province, particularly a new premier likely to be named in just a few months. So stay tuned for that on All You Ever Wanted to Know. Back here on All You Ever Wanted to Know with Yorkton MLA Greg Ottenbright and also Rural and Remote Health Minister. And I know that position has been very busy for you, Greg, especially around this change that has taken place as of December 1st.
Yeah, actually December 4th is when the
the Monday.
The legislation was proclaimed. So the new Saskatchewan Health Authority was a legal entity come December 4th. So we're a few days into the new single health authority, and things are working fairly smoothly by the look of things. The one thing we were worried about off the start was, you know, the connectivity about the different websites and communications and all the rest of it. But, you know, the people we have doing the majority of that work have done a very good job setting the system up. And, you know, for the most part, people on the front line and people that are working in the system or accessing the system shouldn't or will not notice a whole lot of difference. Phone numbers haven't changed. The name of the authority has changed. But other than that, people go to work and deliver the service. What has changed is the board structure, the governance structure, and, of course, the executive structure. We've gone from 12 CEOs in the province to one, and from 63 VPs to 10. And, again, one professional board instead of 12 different boards across the province. So, for the most part, things are looking pretty smooth, and you know, as challenges do surface, we'll be apt and ready to deal with those. But continue to roll this plan out, and you know, deliver as good or better health care across the province. But I think it'll be a lot more seamless when we look at how the system is rolling out and how access to services, and we don't have those arbitrary boundaries within 12 different regions, and maybe different priorities and plans kind of get in the way of delivering health services to everybody across the province, regardless of where they live geographically.
Now, cost efficiency, if you will, it's being considered as one of the benefits, but ultimately, beyond that, there's quite a bit more than that's at stake, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's if anybody reads the panel report that was put together by the panel panel that we put in place to give us some guidance on this, was very much about delivery of services, not about closures, not about necessarily about saving money, although obviously that will come, but it's more about having a seamless healthcare system for the people of the province. And when we do look at the savings, obviously off the top, there's going to be executive management savings because a lot of people that won't be in those positions anymore. And of course, this year, there's severances and things that have to be paid regardless of what job you're in. We have to follow labor laws and labor standards, so they have to be paid their severances. So there'll be a little bit of outlay this year for that. But the next year, we're expecting to see anywhere from $9 to $10 million in savings when you look at board and executive salaries. And then when it comes to the IT side of things, we're looking at probably a $9 or $10 million savings there. And there's a lot of other savings that we won't point to just right now, but efficiencies I've heard to, whether it's physicians or whether it's nurses or EMS providers, as to where they see one health authority could probably afford some savings. We're apt to start recapping those as well. Things like something as simple as getting a CT scan in Yorkton and then getting referred to Regina Capel and then them wanting to do the scan again because it wasn't from their region, when we have one of the best, if not the best, CT scanner available on the market right now in Yorkton. So that does two things. One thing, it adds to the expense of the diagnostic imaging system, but the other thing, it adds to the wait list because you're doing maybe redoing CT scans or other different diagnostic tests that don't need to be repeated but are because of the different regions. That's one broad example of where savings will be realized. But when you look at the complexity of the healthcare system and how many things are involved, you start finding minor savings in all those different areas and actually improving the healthcare to people, you're going to get both better healthcare, less wait lists, and money savings.
Yeah. Well, I know as well people were likely a little nervous just in regards to worried about now Regina, Saskatoon getting everything, like always going to be pushed to the Regina or the Saskatoon for treatments because of like just the numbers of the population and that sort of thing. People getting into the mindset that everything's now going to be shifted to those larger centers and then a community like Yorkton gets forgotten about.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the mindset that happens anytime you have a change, like when they went from multiple districts to the current regions, and now we go from this 12 regions to one. I guess people's just the nature of people, they'll maybe go there. But the indications I've seen right now, because we have to focus quite a bit on Regina and Saskatoon. Based on population, they represent half the province too, but also there are tertiary centers. So we're doing the very acute care, the very acute surgeries, cancer care and the likes. A lot of that has to be set up in those tertiary centers or those specialty centers. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we can start, like whether it's community oncology or whatever the case might be, you can deliver those services out in the rural areas. And that's one thing, even with the makeup of our administration, we're very focused on making sure that we keep as many services in rural areas as we can, because we know we don't have the capacity in the major centers to handle all the cases coming in. You have to have that structure, that support throughout the province. So we want to make sure we keep those strong. Mm-hmm. But also when it comes to the executive level of government, we don't want everybody in one town. You're going to see a bit of a distributive model of that executive structure throughout the province. So you're not going to see, again, everybody in Saskatoon when it comes to the administration side and ministry side in Regina. You're going to see a bit of a distributive model there that's going to, I think, strengthen the whole service.
Excellent. Now, as well, this is going to be what's very different about the Legislative Assembly for years to come, and that will be the fact that Premier Brad Wall, he's sat his last session as Premier in that role. New leader to be chosen in the coming months. But just going back to Premier Brad Wall, 10 years as the Premier and leaving with a rather fascinating, I don't know really how to describe it, the symbol that he left at his office was a plaque. This was a neat story that came out of his last few days in office.
Yeah, leave things better than you found them. Did you leave things better than you found them? That's something he's actually driven as a leader, driven into caucus and cabinet ever since I've known him. And we have to remember he hasn't just been premier for 10 years. He's been the MLA for Swift Current for better than 18 years. So he's got quite a lengthy political career, political history. I think one of the best legacies that you'll see from any premier, current or past, in this country, or especially in our province. And but I mean, that's just the type of leadership he has shown over the years. To me, it's a very much a servant type leader, where he builds up people around him. He doesn't make himself indispensable, although he has garnered a lot of attention just because of his personality and his skill set and his oratory skills, that and of course his popularity not only in our province but all the way across the country and a lot of countries around the world. He's gained quite the reputation. But because of that, it ends up he gets a lot of attention. You don't realize the bench strength or the strength that he's built up behind himself over the years, where I see that as a strong leader, where you build up those leaders around you that when you do get removed or something happens that you're not there anymore, things can continue. You know, you can still provide strong leadership. And that's one thing that he's done. A lot of the leadership candidates, a lot of people in cabinet or caucus right now that names you wouldn't even recognize, to see the types of leaders that we do have within our caucus is quite impressive. And with that, I have a lot of faith we're going to have a strong team going forward. We'll pick a different leader coming up here very shortly, and by the end of January, which will be our new premier. And you know, regardless of what team anybody's been behind, I think you'll see a pretty strong effort for everybody to get behind the new leader, and for the team to go forward and continue to I think deliver pretty good governance for the province of Saskatchewan. You know, focusing on our economy, building a strong economy so we can supply those things to people that they want: healthcare, education, social services, justice system, and all the rest of it, which is what government's traditionally responsible for. And of course, infrastructure, roads, highways, schools, and hospitals. And continue with that work and continue building a strong province, although there might be a bit of a different philosophy depending on the next premier. But, you know, we've got a pretty diverse team with a diverse background that has offered information to Brad right now and will offer that information and guidance to the new premier and the new cabinet.
Well, and there have been some differences of opinion about different things and how people will take certain things in different directions. But by and large, some have also pointed out the fact that, boy, there's a lot of similar responses at a lot of these meet and greets, forums, debates, a lot of same hears, pointing out that it's kind of made the race a little, not necessarily boring, but just a sign of how a lot of the people running for premier are wanting to keep things as they are.
Yeah, well, you know, even as diverse as the candidates are, and it can, not to be too political, but you'll hear the premier, if anybody would have been watching session, he'd kind of poke at the NDP a little bit because they talk about being the party of diversity, but they have two middle-aged white guys running for their leadership, and that's it. You look at our party, we have six individuals running for the leadership. We got a First Nations man, former RCMP officer. You have two women, one with more of a probably liberal background than the other. One was elected, one wasn't. And you've got four other individuals all serving at cabinet at one point in time. You know, three more conservative, one more liberal kind of a background. But, you know, really a pretty diverse, politically diverse and the gender diverse and culturally diverse group of candidates that we'll choose from, and we'll have our new premier and leader. And I think, you know, even regardless of their philosophies, I think a lot of what you've seen happen in the past is Premier Wall even wanting maybe to drive some things that would have been more on his agenda. Without a strong supportive caucus, he won't push his own agenda. So without a 75-80% caucus support, that wouldn't happen. I think you'll see, you know, I'm hoping that you'll see a lot of that continue to happen, that we'll have that team model, that very democratic form of a caucus, that we'll see that continue in the future. But, you know, talking about the similarities, again, those are the differences, but the similarities, you know, for the most part, we're all fiscal conservatives. We all have a strong social conscience, I believe, although coming from different backgrounds. So when you start looking at how many similarities the different candidates have, you're bound to have a lot of that similarity come out. And again, it's due to the positive leadership of Premier Wall for the last 10 years that kind of ingrains in people. You can see the direction you should be going because it is working for the province.
Sure.
So though you want to maybe change things up a little bit, put your stamp on it, you know, you don't want to mess too much with something that's actually been working quite well. And although we'll face criticism from labor groups and, you know, maybe municipalities from time to time and different special interest groups, you know, there's so many things you can point to in the province, when, especially compared with other jurisdictions, we are so strong. And of course, I talked about the AAA credit rating earlier. But, you know, the popularity of Brad isn't by accident. It's because people, I think, for the most part, respect his leadership, respect the direction he's taken the province, and, you know, we want to continue that momentum.
Awesome. Again, Greg Ottenbright, Yorkton MLA, has joined us on the program today. Also, the Rural and Remote Health Minister and Minister of Ukraine Relations. Forgot to talk Ukraine, but how about a Merry Christmas for the people?
Christos Zdaitsya.
Zdaminyaho. And we'll leave it there for today. Greg, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for having us, Jordan. Of course, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all the listeners.
Absolutely. It's all you ever wanted to know on The Rock 98.5. Until next time, have yourself a wonderful day and be blessed.